This is Mae Warren. Today is the 8th of July, 1996. I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Sydney and Francis Lewis.
So I did a little bit of homework here and looked at the Calix. And I see that you were on the basketball team for 4 years.
Yeah. Yes. True.
Is he a basketball star?
Not quite.
Why don't you pull up a chair so you can be comfortable?
So what kind of team was it back when you were here?
My first year, we were Southern Conference champions. And that was, I don't think that Southern Conference exists anymore. Then the team, we were a fair to middling team after that. But we had a very good team my first year.
So what happens when you're the Southern Conference champion?
You're just the Southern Conference champion, that's all. The next year we went to Madison Square Garden and played and got our brains beat out. Okay. And after that, there was nothing eventful. Of course, we were participants in the Southern Conference, I forget how many teams there were, but I think maybe the first eight teams in the league always went to the conference itself where the championship was settled. And we went every year I was on the team. We got as far as the conference championship, but we didn't win again.
So who was the coach then?
Cy Young, and after Cy, there's a coach named Cookie Cunningham.
Never heard of Cookie Cunningham.
No, yeah.
So who was the better coach?
Well, Cy was a tradition here. Cookie Cunningham was a better coach.
You okay. Want to expand upon that a little
no,
bit?
No, I mean, he was a more modern person. This was at the end of Cy's affiliation with W&L, really, and he was ready to retire. I'm just trying to think. I think Cookie came my sophomore year. So I played with Cy only 1 year.
And that was the championship season?
Yeah.
Well, that was a good year for him to go out.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Coach of the championship.
Yeah, he was quite a... I mean, the Cy's name is still bandied about around here, I suppose, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. So do you... I can just imagine this trip to Madison Square Garden must mm-hmm. have some stories connected with it. Can you remember back? How'd you get up there?
Well, there's some stories connected to it which I'd rather not tell, okay? But I think we went about, I guess don't even remember, I think we drove up. I think we were up in a maybe three or four automobiles. I just don't recall now. Where did you stay? I think we stayed at the Hotel New Yorker, which no longer exists, because it was close to Madison Square Garden. And I think the Hotel New Yorker was on about 34th Street, and the garden was somewhere around 35th, 36th, something like that. But we were there, went up one day and came back the next day.
Well, we couldn't have gotten in too much trouble.
We played Long Island University, who beat us pretty badly. And there was some internal controversy. Not public controversy, but there was some internal controversy because Long Island University's star player was a black man. And Washington Lee just didn't play teams that had black basketball players. No other Southern school did either. We weren't unique. And so that was a real problem for the team, or ostensibly it was. But otherwise, it was a very nice trip. I liked New York. In fact, we lived there half the year, but playing basketball at Washington Lee was a good experience, and some great friendships were developed.
I think the most interesting story that you told me was being stopped in the middle of an exam.
Oh yeah, it's interesting. That was, but that was locally connected with basketball. Maybe you didn't know him because he's dead now. Did you know Dr. Laughlin?
No.
From the law school.
But please tell me. I know who he is.
Because I was just trying to find out if his wife was here, if his widow was still living here, and she is, but she's in Colorado this week. But he came down my second year in law school. And my first year, I decided that I wasn't going to play basketball because it would be too much of a burden. I was just going to study law and be a good lawyer someday. And that was Dr. Laughlin's first year. And then he was sort of stunned by everything that was going on at Weissenlee. He was a wonderful man, but he just couldn't figure out some of the things that were going on. And I remember the first exam we took, a few of us left during the exam period and went down and shot pool. And he just couldn't, he couldn't understand what was going on. He'd never been any place where students could get up from taking an exam and do whatever they wanted to, you know what I mean? I don't think he really knew what the honor system here was all about. But anyway, I mean, he did, but it still was amazing to him. But my freshman year in law school, I was taking one of his exams, an exam and taught, and that was his second year of teaching at WNL. And I looked up during the exam period, and there was someone at the door waving to me, saying, Sydney. And it was the basketball coach, Cookie Cunningham, and he waved to me, and I got up and walked out to see him, and he said, we're playing the University of Richmond tonight. I've got several men who are injured, and the squad is very small, and I'm wondering if you can't suit up for the game. And I said, I haven't had a basketball in my hand for a year almost. And he said, well, I don't know. He said, you might not play. He said, but if I need a fifth player on the court, I need to have somebody. And I said, I've got this exam to take. I've only been in here a couple of hours. And I said, if I'm going to do anything, I've got to go home and get some rest, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I have to speak to Dr. Laughlin about it. And he said, he's Mr. Laughlin. But he said, well, come on, let's go down and speak to him. So I went down with the coach, with Cookie, and we talked to him, told him what I wanted to do, that I wanted to leave class. I was going to my fraternity house and rest up, have lunch, and rest after lunch, and then early in the evening, I was going to have a dinner around 5 o'clock, and then I'd go over to the gym and get ready for the game that night, which I did. And then I told him, when the game was over, I'm sure I would feel up to it because I really didn't expect to play too much. Because even if I were put in the game, I was not in condition to play very much. And I said, I'll come back after the game and I'll finish my exam. And that's when he said, are you serious? I said, yes, I'm serious. Well, anyway, make a long story short, went to the game, got put in my basketball suit, went out to the game, sat on the bench the whole game, never got into the game. When the game was over, I got up and went back to the locker room, got dressed, went over to Tucker Hall then, which is on front campus, and finished my exam. And I got home about 11:30 that night.
That's a great story.
Isn't that a wonderful story?
Only at Washington Lee.
That's a great story.
Yeah, so anyway, whenever I would see Mr. Laughlin after we, when I'd come back to school occasionally, I'd sit down and chat with him a little bit about it, and he'd shake his head. He said, I know, I didn't believe it, but it happened. But that's what Washington Lee is all about.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the whole concept of the honor system, yeah, because that's something I'm wanting to talk to everybody about. What does the honor system mean to you? Was it something new to you when you came here?
No, sure. I mean, it was new as a student, yes. I mean, but, you know, I think the honor system, when you first come here, you think of the honor system in regard to your grades and your classes, but that isn't what it's all about. The honor system is how you live here. And I mean, Francis knows this. I used to, every summer, you know, when we got out for summer, I would leave my books all over the campus. Didn't remember where they were. I left them. When I came back in the fall, they were right where I'd left them. And I mean, it's that sort of thing, that sort of, you know, sort of minor, but you could trust everybody and everybody could trust you. And that was real, the real message of the honor system. It was trust. And made, I mean, it, in that sort of world, which isn't a real world, mind you. I mean, that doesn't exist outside of Lexington, Virginia, and some other places that might have a good honor system, as good as we have. That's not the real world, but it's a good world to have, to be able to live in a part of your life anyway. Because you just know that there are no, what's the word, there are no hidden, what's the word I'm looking for, but anyway, there's nothing hidden behind people's front. I mean, what you see is what they are. And that's a good feeling.
How did you pick Washington and Lee in the first place? By
accident. By accident.
Well, tell me about
that.
Well,
I was talking about basketball again. I had a good friend in Richmond. We played high school basketball together. And he had a brother who was here, who was a freshman when I graduated high school. And he was graduating the next year. He said, "You go on up to W&L this year, and then next year when I graduate, I'll come to W&L." And I did. I came to W&L. Before that, I had been thinking about Vanderbilt. I don't know why. Maybe some of the things I'd read about Vanderbilt impressed me. I don't know. But when my friend told me this, I was sort of impressed by what he had to say. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, he left high school and went to Woodbury Academy for a year, graduated, and then went to the University of Virginia.
Okay. Became one of those damn Wahoos.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We still are friends. We in fact, I didn't see him this summer yet, but he has a home down in Virginia Beach nearby us, and he stopped by evidently. I was resting, and I didn't see him, but he's from Richmond, and very fine man. But it was purely an accident. And when I came up here, I didn't know anybody up here except Billy Wilshire, his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Wilshire had a girlfriend in Richmond. And I was the best thing that ever happened to Billy Wilshire because he had an automobile. And every day of his life, he would drive to Richmond. It was just amazing. And he would call me because he wanted company. And I went back quite often with him. Never should have, but I did. And so I was a real lifesaver for him because he didn't have to drive alone back and forth to Richmond, but we used to drive down after school in the afternoons and come back late that night.
Oh my God.
How long a drive was it then?
Then it was about 3.5 hours.
You've got your arm mixed up here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Old Route 60?
Yeah, Old Route 60.
Whoa,
right.
Over the mountain?
Over the mountains,
up
that's right. Yeah.
Up and down?
Yeah, we used to go by Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy had a big Packard. Remember the Packard automobile?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm a little young.
Yeah, well, the Packard automobile was sort of comparable, or much more luxurious than say the Lincoln or the Cadillac today. But he used to love to drive an automobile. There was nobody on those roads, and heaven knows if I was in an automobile with somebody drove the way he drove as fast as he did, I'd get out at the first red light. I mean, because he really did speed.
What did the Texans here drive?
Oh, they drove Lincoln Continentals. It's a wonderful story about a Texan young man by the name of Bobby Neal, who was a Phi Delta Theta. And they tell the story about him. He had two Lincoln Continentals when they first came out, and they were beautiful automobiles, absolutely beautiful. And they used to tell a story that one day Bobby got picked up in Texas for speeding on one of these flat roads, and they took him into a magistrate's office, and the magistrate said, you know, you were going 95 miles an hour and such zone speed limits, our son. He said, I'm going to have to fine you $100. Just got to do it to teach you a lesson. So Bobby went into his pocket, picked out his money clip, and took out two $100 bills and gave them to the magistrate. And the magistrate said, I said $100. He said, yes, sir. He said, I know, but I'm coming back through here tomorrow. They tell that story about him. And he was just like, he was one who would say that too, you know. But Washington Lee, in those days anyway, there were certain traditions that we don't have anymore. That in the beginning I was sort of sorry, because when my son came up here, he was in the class, what was it, 66, I think. The traditions had just about ended then. And as most people who were part of those traditions, you immediately feel a great loss.
Tell me, what kind of traditions?
Well, traditions, some of which were good and some of which were not so good. Well, you had the tradition of speech, that you said hello to everybody. It didn't make any difference. And if you didn't say hello, that you'd find yourself up before the Freshman Assimilation Committee. That was when you first came here. And you would receive punishment by the students.
Do you have to know their names?
What's that?
Do you have to say hello, John, or hello?
No, if you didn't know their names, that was okay. But, you know, after a while, with a small student body, you get to know everybody's name within 30 days. And then, of course, you had the beanie. The freshman, you know, the hat, the freshman hat. That was a dress code, where you wouldn't walk out the front door without a coat and tie on. And, they were outward manifestations of, you know, outward traditions that you had. And, of course, there used to be, and I'm not sure, I don't think there is any more freshman camp. Is there still a freshman camp?
Well, they do a freshman orientation.
But they do it here.
Yeah, they do it on campus.
Yeah, see, we went to a freshman camp for a week. I think it was out at, what's the name of that place? But anyway, there was a camp where all freshmen came and spent a week in the rough. And it was a terrific week because you got to know everybody before you walked on campus. Already you'd made, my class must have been about, my class must have been about 200, I suppose.
Now, who ran that camp?
Washington Lee.
But who, what people?
It was, I'm sure it was Tex Tilson.
Uh-huh.
You ever hear Tex's name? He was the football coach here while Cy was the basketball coach. And, but he ran the camp. He also, there was a camp, I think it's still in existence, that he ran too, you know, as an aside, which is Camp Virginia. Is that still around here?
I don't know. For children?
Yes, for children.
I've heard of it, but I don't know if it's still.
Yeah, it's a very fine boys' camp. Very fine. Boy, up at Goshen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the freshman camp was, as I recall. But it was terrific. And then, of course, we came back and we spent about a week in Lee Chapel listening to Dr. Gaines, which was terrific, because if you could spend a week listening to Dr. Gaines and you weren't imbued with the spirit of Washington Lee, you should go home. I mean, because he was something else again. And he was an orator, so to speak. And the ways of Daniel Webster, somebody like that, because when he got up and spoke with us, you could hear a pin drop. And of course, that's what Gans Hall was, that's what this building was named after, right? And, but he was also a preacher man. Before he became a college educator, I think he was trained as a minister.
Really?
I believe so. I'm not sure. I don't know why that's in the back of my mind. That's a sure and devil sounded like one, you know. But I think he was, before he came up here, I think he had an administrative position and a teaching professorship at University of Richmond. And then he took over the presidency here. And he was here for a long time, exactly.
Now,
he was a nice man.
Were there any particular teachers who meant a lot to you, members of the faculty?
Oh, yes, a lot of them. Now, both in law school and in the undergraduate school. A philosophy professor, a man named Dr. Morton, and one whom I'm sure you've heard of, Dr. Latour.
Uh-huh.
I think he lived to be 99 or 105, one or two. He just died recently.
104, he just died.
That's exactly right.
And I haven't talked to anybody who took any of his classes.
Yeah, he was not a good professor, but he was a wonderful man.
Uh-huh.
He really was. And he was a, what would you call it? He would come in, he'd come in wearing two different shoes, two different socks. He'd come in with his collar open, which you didn't do in those days. He didn't realize his collar was open and his tie was not tied properly or what have you. But he was a very nice man. In law school, there was Mr. Williams, Skinny Williams, as he was called, Dr. Light, Mr. Laughlin, and Dean Moreland, who was dean of the law school then, one nice story to tell you about him. Francis, when I was in law school, Francis was at the University of Michigan, and I used to go to Richmond, get my mother's automobile, and drive up to the University of Michigan. Now, of course, at the law school then, if you were on the dean's list, you could take unlimited cuts. Didn't even have to go to school if you got certain grades, to which I was entitled. And I used to drive up, I don't know, maybe once or twice a month, I suppose. I forget, and Frances used to meet me.
We
used to meet in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
she would come down from Ann Arbor.
Aren't you a nice
person? I used to come on the train.
Yeah, you used to come on the train. And
that bodes well for a good marriage.
That's right.
To meet halfway.
And I think the last time this happened was, as a preface to this story, we went up to Columbus to meet Frances, and Cookie Cunningham came along. Basketball coach I was having, because he had been a great athlete at Ohio State University.
Right.
He'd been All-American football player, All-American basketball player. And we stopped off in Charleston, West Virginia on our way up to get a sandwich at some fast food place. And when we came out, the automobile trunk had been rifled, been broken open, and our tickets to the football game were stolen from the bag. Well, we were very fortunate because he was, as I say, an all-time Ohio State great. When we got there, he went to the athletic offices and arranged that they had kept a record of the seats they'd sent him. And so we were able to take our seats over. And while we were there, of course, somebody came in with the seats that had been stolen. And I forget whether I don't think they were the people who had stolen
the
tickets.
Them.
They had bought the tickets from whoever the thief was, But anyway, when we got back to Lexington, maybe 3 or 4 days later, I forget, because we stayed in Columbus a few days, there was a note for me from Dean Moreland. And he said, "Will you please come to the office to see me when you return to school?" So I didn't know what was going on. I went in to see him, and I was standing. He was sitting at his desk. He was a wonderful old man. said, Sydney, he said, there's a rumor going around here which I don't like. He said, that, and I said, what do you mean there's rumors, Dean Mullen? He said, well, he said, there's a rumor that you're taking your law education as a correspondence course here. And he said, I don't like that. And I said, no, sir. I said, we went up with Cookie Cunningham to see the football game, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, well, look, he said, I'm telling you, there ain't no more football games for you. Although you officially, you are entitled to as many cuts as you want to, unofficially, you better not take them if you want to remain in this, in this school. So I didn't take any more after that year. But he was quite a guy, and he was firm, you know. I wasn't about to argue with him.
That was an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So why was Skinny Williams called Skinny Williams?
Because he was about, Skinny must have been about 6 foot six and must have weighed 110 pounds. I mean, that was a good reason to call him Skinny Williams. That's right. And he was a good professor,
What did he teach?
He taught property law. And Mr. Light, Charles Light, Dean Mullen taught evidence. And Charles Light, what did he taught, spoke? He and Mr., he left my freshman year to go into the Army. No. I think an adjutant general's office or somewhere, but he taught torts, and Mr. Laughlin came in to take over his job, and then Light came back after a couple of years, and I forget what were his main courses when he came back. But those were the days with Charlie McDowell teaching contracts, and he was a real character.
Tell me what you mean by that.
What's that?
How was he a character?
Well, he was a Charlie. You knew you could read him from he was an open book, and you knew exactly what he was going to give you on the exams. You didn't have to do anything. You just knew what he was going to do, and he was a country storyteller. He would just sit in class all day with you and tell stories, et cetera, and used to sit around in front of the law school, which was Tucker Hall then, and we used to sit out in front with him in the chair, sort of rock back and forth, and he would tell you stories. And he was a nice man. His wife was the secretary there at the law school, Mrs. McDowell, and she remained on even after he died, I think.
Was she important to the students?
Yes, well, she was the secretary to the dean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, she was secretary to Dean Mullen. I'm trying to think who succeeded Dean Mullen as dean. I think Charlie Light succeeded him as dean. He became dean of the law school.
Now, I'm trying to remember the year. Were you here when old Tucker Hall burned?
No, that was before.
That had happened before. Right, I'm trying to remember, was it 1934?
Yeah, that was before.
So Tucker Hall was brand new.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So I guess everything was, it seemed like it was very up to date at that point.
Yeah, I suppose it was, yeah.
So describe old Tucker Hall.
What's that?
Describe the Tucker Hall that you went to law.
Well, it was a very small building. Best way for me to describe it is I used to do all of my studying there. I used to undress in the library. I used to sit around, there were four or five of us used to do that. I used to sit around my shorts, and nobody objected. Nobody ever came in there. And, it could be awful hot around here, just like it is now. And when this time of the year came around, well, before now, but in the springtime, when it would get real hot, or in the fall, when it would get real hot, we'd study in the library, and we had to disrobe. We couldn't stand it. There was no air conditioning, so we had to make do. And the only way we could make do was to take off layers of clothes, that's all. So we used to sit around in our shorts and in our t-shirts.
I wish I could find a picture of that. Wouldn't that be a great shot?
Yeah, no, that,
Is there a shot of that?
No, I don't think so.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I don't think so. I think there were a couple of shots. It might have been some of the calyxes of a few of us sitting in the law library with our feet up on the table. I don't know. I don't remember that either. But I've seen those photographs. But no one came in and photographed us when we were sitting around in our shorts. But we would do it, I mean, for, you know, for long periods of time, as long as the heat lasted. And because I don't know now, but, you know, in fraternity houses, because in those days, of course, there were no dorms. There were no upper-class dorms like you have now. There were Graham Lee's dormitory, which was for freshmen. And then you lived in, if you lived off campus, I mean, lived off campus in two ways, in fraternity houses, or beyond small apartments around that. And it was very difficult to study in either one of those. I mean, you just couldn't do it. I know Lee Kenna, who's up here now, was my roommate in law school. And we lived down here an apartment on the lower level of a house right next door to the Sigma Chi house. It was owned by Mr. Mattingly, who was the registrar here at the university. I think that was his official title. But we couldn't study down there. We had to go to the library if we wanted to study. And of course, the wonderful thing was the library was open 24 hours a day. We could go whenever we wanted to, and we didn't have to, you know, didn't have to leave or come on any schedule, and so it was very nice. And
tell about the relationship among the fraternities.
In which way? Mm-hmm. Oh yes. Well, of course, this was at least it was. I don't know whether it was peculiar to me, but I lived in the fraternity house in my undergraduate. Lived in freshman dormitory and then moved my sophomore year to this fraternity house where I lived for 3 years. And my fraternity house was the last building on Fletcher Avenue before you get to the parade grounds of VMI. I think now it's a VMI alumni house or something, I don't know. But anyway, in those days, of course, every fraternity house had its own kitchen. You know, the fraternity members ate and slept there. I mean, the university had no sleeping facilities for upperclassmen. That was the only place you could go, other than these apartments I'm talking about. But in my day, anyway, the fraternities were really very, very open. I mean, in other words, I don't think I ever ate a meal. Ever ate a fraternity house meal without a friend from another fraternity, either at his fraternity house or at my fraternity house. I mean, in other words, you would just go around and eat at different fraternity houses with your friends, and they would come to you, you know what I mean? It was a cementer, so to speak, of really close friendships. And like, for example, I had many friends at Phi Delta Theta, and I would go down there, you know, to lunch or to dinner, and they would treat me as a fraternity brother. And the same thing would happen when they came to my fraternity. So it was as though there was just, the campus was just one big fraternity. I don't know whether it still exists that way, and I doubt it. I know it didn't happen, it wasn't like that in my son's day. And of course it got so here, I remember the last few years I was on the board, and when you were on the board too, mm-hmm. The fraternities just really got out of hand here. They were trashing the buildings and everything else, and that didn't, I mean, you know, we had, every now and then we'd have a drunken brawl, but it would be one night and we'd be cleaned up the next morning, something like that. It wasn't vandalism the way I heard it about what was going on in these fraternities when I was sitting on the board. And all the trouble that was being had here.
Now, someone who was here last week for the Alumni College brought some pictures of his fraternity, And there was one of them where the people, everybody in the picture was wearing gorgeous evening dress.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And he said, I said, oh, was this getting ready to go to a formal dance? And he said, no, it was just a house party.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those were the days.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, now, did you come?
Oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah, with luggage. We'd have three or four formal gowns. We really dressed.
Well, tell me from the lady's point of view, what was it like to come to Lexington?
Well, first you had to pack a lot.
Yeah.
And it seems to me we would there would be two formal major affairs and then one at the fraternity house. Isn't that the way it worked?
Yeah, well actually, in those days there were two night dance sets.
Right.
Which is spring and fall. And then you had fancy dress ball.
Right.
Which was three nights, and finals, which were three nights.
Yeah, so that was a major activity.
Oh, yeah. So the ladies used to have to, they couldn't wear the same gown.
So you had a pack and pack, and we really dressed in those days.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, and I was saying this to somebody, but dating in those days was not such a serious matter. That is, as I remember it, you had to have late dates after the ball, right?
Yeah.
You'd have a date with someone else
to go
get something to eat.
With someone else?
Right.
Yeah, other than
the person you came, because he
down.
Had,
yeah.
he, and if you didn't, you wouldn't get invited back because he had a late date. Is that not correct? And then you'd have another date. I don't know, would go on all night. But late dating was an accepted fact. I was in shock when my children started going out and they wouldn't even date more than one person, you know. Because I said, we had a lot more fun. You know, we used to, but anyway, these parties were something else again. I remember them very fondly.
Well, now, where did all these girls stay in Lexington?
We did not stay in the fraternity houses, which was the system at UVA. And at UVA, you came down and supposedly the men moved out of the fraternity houses and gave it over to the dates. But they didn't all leave. That was a mess. But here we were much more genteel.
Yeah,
now where did
houses
we,
around town,
yeah,
boarding
was,
houses?
Yeah, who was the lady that I used to stay with? They used to take in girls for these dances.
There were quite a few homes around here that did that, and that's the way the. And of course, lots of girls came over from the nearby schools, and they went back after the dance. And then they come over the next day.
And then the girls would come, like, from Sweetbriar, and
that's
they had
chaperones.
That's
what I said, the neighboring schools.
Yeah, but where did they come from that they had chaperones?
From Sweetbriar, Nylands, and Randolph-Macon.
But they must have stayed here. What did they need with the chaperones?
What's your question?
They used to come with chaperones.
Oh, yes.
And so
chaperones would stay in the house, sure.
Yeah,
when they stayed overnight.
I'm trying to think of that lady's name. There were people who would do that. As a,
you're not thinking about fraternity as Mother Miss Flournoy.
No. I'm trying to think. I stayed in the ladies' home,
mm-hmm.
who took in young
Boarders.
Women who
yeah.
came for these
now,
events.
Were you coming all the way from the University of Michigan for this?
I think I did a couple of times, but the thing is, I came down here when I was still in high school, so time gets. Screwed up because when I went to college, I never came back for fancy dress because it seems to me we had exams.
That's right.
While you were having fancy dress, and in those days, they had very big bands here, you know, Benny Goodman and so forth, and I used to be able to tune into them on the radio.
That's right.
And get really mad that there I was studying hard for an exam, and you were having fun. So time, you know, I can't remember every detail. But I think after I went to Michigan, I did not come back. Or did I?
Came back for finals.
Oh, came back for finals, yeah.
Now, Did you ever, you came to fancy dress?
I never got to fancy dress. So the time just evidently was
not right.
The only
time you think you got to fancy dress is when your son was here.
Right. You came out to Michigan for the big dance at Michigan was J-Hop, the junior prom.
Yeah,
and I have a picture of us.
Drove through the snow, right.
Right. So.
Well, take me, have me be your best friend at one of the dance sets you came for. Tell me, I'm your friend back in Richmond and you're coming back and telling me all about your weekend. What did you do?
Drove out and saw a house mountain after the day. Well, first of all, when you danced, you also did not dance with the same person all the time. In fact, am I correct? If your date did not get cut in, do they still, I bet they don't cut in anymore.
Maybe not, I don't think.
You know, somebody
do.
Would come tap you on the shoulder.
You
would also not get invited back.
Yeah.
Is that right?
No, it's not quite, but. They were the days you'd get tapped on the shoulder and everybody danced with everybody.
Right.
And
you had to have some stags around to keep.
Oh, sure.
Some men had to be there without dates.
Oh,
or
sure. There were many men who were there with their dates and they would just, they would tap the dates of their friends and to keep things going.
But I also remember, and that was the era when you see this in the movies when they talk about, depict this era, when a lot of the when these terrific bands were here, when we would sort of stand around the bandstand.
Yes.
And listen.
Rather than dance, you would just stand around and watch. And I remember the first time Benny Goodman came down.
Yeah.
And it was an old Oremus gymnasium. That's where the dances were held. And everybody in Lexington, Virginia was up. They couldn't get down on the dance floor where the ball, where the ball was. But everybody, those balconies were absolutely packed and jammed. I was scared to death that they were going to cave in. Now, I never in my life saw so many people, up there at that time. But Benny Goodman was the king of swing or whatever it was at that time, and everybody had to see him and to hear him, and it was worthwhile to see him and hear him too. But the dances were, as you know, very formal, and
right.
and not rowdy at all on the floor. And the rowdiness that took place always took place later at the fraternity houses.
Well, you didn't drink.
That's right.
And I didn't drink in those days. But I don't remember. Was there a lot of drinking?
Not in my fraternity house. Not at all.
See, I don't remember.
No, but there were some. Like, for example, down the street at the K.E. house, Kappa Alpha house. I'm telling you, they had a few, not everybody, but they had a few students there who were really, who were drunks in every sense of the word. I mean, not only dance time, they would just stay stoned during the week. And we'd see them all the time because they were just a block from us, fraternity house. And that's a fraternity, I don't know whether they're still there or not, but it was sort of diagonally across the street from Tucker Hall.
That's not a fraternity.
It's not a fraternity house anymore. It was Kappa Alpha then.
I don't remember.
It was the most southern of all the fraternities. I think it might have been the first fraternity on campus, and certainly maybe even the first national fraternity. I don't know, but it was it had a long time to get to where it was when I was here. It was really, they used to talk about it. I never saw it personally, but they used to talk about some of the students getting in bathtubs and full of whiskey, et cetera, and that sort of thing. You didn't know whether it was true or whether it was rumor, Made a good story anyway.
And you turned the tape over.
Yeah.